Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories. Good morning. Hello. Whoa. Hey, how's it going? Welcome. Come on in, grab a seat or whatever. My name is Jesse. This is Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, the campus community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from the ancestral and unceded homelands of the Halkomelem and Squamish-speaking peoples. You can listen at 90.1 FM, which I've mentioned already, or you can go to cjsf.ca and stream us there. We actually have a cool new radio app that you can get on your smartphone of whatever variety you have on either the Apple Play or the App Store or the Google Play Store. And stream us wherever you might be in the world. This is, as I said, Speak Up, the show from CJSF's Public Affairs and Talk Department, where we talk and play music and interview people and do all sorts of cool stuff. Today's show is jam-packed. I have at least two, possibly three, depending on how things move, pieces for you. Two are interviews recorded by Public Affairs Department Work Study William at the Catalano Music Festival a couple weekends ago. And the other is a new interview with the SFU Pipe Band conducted by Music Department Coordinator Connor at the Skagit Valley Highland Games. So we'll try to keep things moving and get to all of that. But first, we are going to start with some local music, as we always do. And this time, we're really going to touch the limit of what is underground and local with a band that started out very underground and local here in Vancouver. And actually features a member who was once a CJSFer. They ascended to relative fame, as much as a two-piece rock band from Vancouver can ascend to on the global indie music scene. It's Japandroids, who have a new record coming out that they've just announced called Fate and Alcohol. That comes out in October. They've released a lead single, which is called Chicago, and we're going to hear it right now. I have not listened to this yet, so we'll hear it for the first time together right now.
I can see it in Chicago. Shots of the good stuff, too. I'm trying
in Chicago.
From Japan Droids, that is Chicago, from the upcoming record Fate and Alcohol, which is out October 18th. This is Speak Up on CJSF, and now you are going to hear William's interview with a favorite artist of mine, favorite artist of mine, and also a great person, Devours, who performed at the Catalano Music and Arts Festival. And William caught up with Jeff and had a pretty cool conversation. So you're going to hear that, as well as some of the background sounds of Catalano Festival and all that, right after this track by Devours, just to give you some context from his latest record, Homecoming Queen. This is Jacuzzi, My Stonewall.
This is William Hofsink with CJSF, and today I am here with...
Devourers!
Devourers, yes, awesome. Tell me a little about yourself for people who don't know.
I am a musician in Vancouver. I make DIY, sort of dark, gay synth pop music.
That's an awesome description.
We're here at Catalano. I'm playing in about an hour and a half on the Maple stage. Woo-hoo! I'm excited.
And now, and we talked a little bit over Instagram too. Like, obviously, synth pop, house music has had a very like gay history. And as a straight person, though, I've had a lot of interest again, like diving into that culture kind of from the outside. But one thing I also kind of realized too is it's not even just those two genres. There's also like electronic music in general. Like, correct me if I'm wrong, but I've heard kind of like a subtle industrial sound to your music too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I grew up on Nine Inch Nails.
So. I'm a big Coil fan too. So.
Oh, I never got into Coil.
Oh, really?
Like, I've never gotten into Coil.
Have you listened to them or like?
No.
No, like they're
a name that I've known of since forever, but yeah, I don't
know. Yeah, like, you know the story, right? Like, gay couple, they've been like some of the most visible musicians in like industrial music, and I don't know, they've always been their storytelling and how vivid it is, that also really impacted me. And like, is that something you kind of want to do, like tell very vivid, like explicit stories? And like what kind of stories do you like to tell in your music, though?
I'm gonna have to look up Coil.
Yeah,
you
no,
just sold me
Horse
on
Rotovator,
Coil,
amazing.
Will. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm trying to do.
The Ape of Maples is one of their like posthumous albums they did after John Balance passed away.
What's another album called?
The Ape of Maples.
The Ape?
My favorite one is Horse Rotovator, but it's not on Spotify, unfortunately.
Okay.
Are
they American?
British.
Whoa.
Yeah. No.
Okay, so you're a huge Coil. I'm gonna have to look this up. Cool. Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to do something similar. All of my albums have been, about... maybe I could say like the darker side of queer existence.
Oh.
I feel like there's a lot of, you know, like being gay in pop music is nothing new, but I'm kind of over the whole era of like, look at me, I'm pretty, and I'm like making songs about pride. You know, like I want to make songs about like body dysmorphia and masculinity and like insecurities and gay politics. And so I kind of want to like push the conversation forward a little bit.
Cool.
To like update it for 2024.
Yeah.
Essentially, there are so many stories, like queer stories, that haven't been told yet.
Like, do you have like some like specific examples of like maybe underground like queer performers or like queer stories you've read that have really like kind of made you think, huh, I hadn't thought of that before, even like from your own experience?
I don't know. I think that this is gonna sound cheesy, but in Vancouver I've tried to like become the change that I wanted to see in this city.
Oh.
I don't know if I've had a lot of like influences from like gay culture or literature or anything like that. I just think that I wanted to like, you know, I probably needed therapy when I was growing up, and music was always like my therapy. So all of my songs have always just been like diary entries basically into my life. And
I
just wanted
artists.
To like give a glimpse into what like big city gay life is like in Canada, I guess. Any favorite artists?
Yeah, favorite or like artists that really put you on to like making music in some way.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Like, I think Missy Elliott was like a huge one.
Oh, interesting. I think I listened to her stuff.
Moby was a really big influence on me in terms of like being an electronic producer.
Yeah.
I think I learned a lot from Moby's early music. Trent Reznor, I think, is brilliant.
Me too.
Early Nine Inch Nails, I think, is pretty amazing.
It's really funny. You're the second musician I've interviewed here who cited like Nine Inch Nails as an influence. And
yeah.
I remember exactly where I was, grade 10 English class, listening to The Downward Spiral for the first time. I think it destroyed my brain chemistry. Or not destroyed, but like reshaped it in some way. It's like there's something to be said about that. And like,
yeah.
So do you also like to explore, like, because you did say you like the darker underbelly of like the queer community? That's like something that you're really fascinated in. Do you have like any specific like concept albums or concepts you explore within that?
No.
Not really. Sorry.
I don't know. These are very good questions. I'm not exactly sure what to say.
No, that's totally fine.
I'm distracted by this like bass solo right now.
Oh my god, yeah.
They're like ripping it hard right now.
Speaking of, though. Do you have any like other artists here you've been really enamored with?
Like any
artists here that you'd like love to work with, maybe in the future, or
oh god, like in Vancouver?
Pardon?
Do you mean like anywhere or like in Vancouver?
Vancouver and the festival, like.
Oh, I mean there are so many young bands that are doing exciting stuff in Vancouver right now. I feel like a lot of my friends aged out of the scene during COVID, and now it's like a whole new ball game. There are like hundreds of new bands, lots of like Gen Z kids like playing at Green Auto and stuff, and I love the idea of collaborating. I've been doing remixes for people for a long time, and I want to just like continue on that path. I really want to play shows with young people right now. That's like the major thing. So I think less a bit about like collaborating musically and think more about like how do I put on a show with like people who I think are doing cool things. And so yeah, I feel like Music Waste, the lineup was really inspiring this year. There were some exciting new bands that I discovered. Oh, okay.
Yeah, like any names in particular or like
there's a new band that I got to play with at Music Waste. They're called Two Girls, One Daw.
Oh my god.
Like a trans duo doing kind of like subversive, cool electronic stuff. I was really into that. There's a band called Piss that everyone was talking about this year. They were really, really good. A few others, yeah, there's a band called B-Bomb who played at Green Auto who I thought were really good. Just so many. The curation was insane this year. It was such a good festival. So, yeah, and Vancouver's a really exciting city right now.
Giving me some FOMO. But, that's really awesome. Kind of to come back a little bit here.
Okay.
When I brought up, again, like, the very gay history of, like, synth pop and house music, there's a lot of discourse I had read about, too, especially in house and how, like, kind of that style, because it originated in the gay clubs for gay people, for trans people, for people of color, like seeing white producers work, like, come to fame with it, like Daft Punk, for example. Like, there's a bit of animosity. Like, there was an album I listened to recently called Midtown 120 Blues by do you know Tara Tamlitz? I think is their name.
Yeah, I do not know that name.
It's really interesting. It's a concept album that's all about kind of like the history of house music from the perspective of like almost a Ziggy Stardust-esque figure called DJ Sprinkles.
Wow,
and
he's
like
interesting,
kind of interspersed with the songs. It's like, it gives you the history lesson and also like a very vitriolic like exploration of how house has been co-opted. And I'm wondering, like, do you think like that's been for the better? Like, the house has gotten like larger exposure, or do you think things have been lost from the culture?
I cannot speak on house music. I don't know.
Or house,
I don't know,
or like gay music. I mean, like sort of like music that's like gay, but then becomes very popular for like audiences or LGBT in general. I should say queer, maybe is a better word.
Yeah. Okay. Trying to figure out what the question is. Yeah. Sometimes genres start in underground scenes and are typically queer and trans, and then become mainstream. And I think that, I don't know, it's like, it's good for people in the suburbs, you know, who like are going through something and they want to see themselves reflected in like a big pop star or something, like Chapel Roan or something like that.
Oh yeah, of course.
It's like having a big moment, and like people in small town Iowa or something, like they need to see that. So I'm a little bit cynical. I'm just like, yeah, mainstream stuff is like not... It's sort of like a watered-down version of like cooler, underground, more creative stuff. But I think that for people in the world, music is a beautiful thing, and I don't want to be negative.
Yeah,
gay culture, drag culture, it's very, very booming. It's popular. It's mainstream right now. And that is great for a lot of people.
And if it pulls you in too, right? Like, if it pulls in into the underground a bit, like, then... Who can really fault it? Like,
yeah, for sure. I think that it's like it's a gateway mm-hmm. for a lot of people. You know, if I think back to my youth, there wasn't really anything gay like happening in mainstream music at all. But this was like mid to late 90s.
I can only think
and
of
I
like
thought of like Slipknot or something was a band that I was really into back in the day. Not gay by any means,
but they were like
a gateway into metal.
Yeah,
and it was sort of like pop metal,
new metal, right? Like that was a whole scene. I was having a conversation a couple days ago with a friend, and I was thinking, like, I think part of why new metal was like such a successful and kind of divisive scene too is that it was some of like the like that and alt metal and gothic metal at around the same time, they were all like very open about like discussing their feelings in a way that a lot of like metal music was more about like creating these like harrowing soundscapes or fantasy stories.
Yeah,
and, like,
absolutely.
Fun to that too, but I think it opened the floodgates to a lot of like really interesting.
Yeah, I think a lot of teenagers connected to nu metal.
Like an artist,
the lyrics were about like feeling, you know, rejected.
Like,
I feel like it was dark.
Yeah,
people like Jonathan Davis from Korn, and
I was just thinking of him
like
too.
They went through some really hard stuff in their life, and they were working through it. And maybe I'm doing something similar.
And even too with like music. I listened to the first Korn LP and very recently, and I was kind of mixed on it, but I did think like I totally understand why they blew up like that.
Yeah,
and that
same
one song, that's the word I cannot say, but it's misspelled. I could see, again, it's not him like talking about his experience as a gay man, because he's not a gay man. It was more like being labeled that way, because of how he identified, because like how he dressed, how he, well, the stuff he listened to, and what that made me think of too is like I could imagine someone like you really like projecting onto that.
I connected to it, you know. Mm-hmm. I think the young people who've been bullied, which is probably a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Through music, you know, that's what a lot of it was.
Exactly.
It was about, like, feeling like an outcast in high school or whatever, and like regaining like agency and power through music as like someone in their 20s.
Now, this might get a bit personal, this next question, but I had been thinking about it when I was reading up on you and your music. So I saw on like your page before you, like, I think immediately before you started like music full time. You came out as gay then, like when you were a bit older, right? Like,
yeah, I was 25.
Do you mind if I ask, like what, like kind of like the springboard was there, or like what?
I lived in Montreal for 3 years. I grew up on Vancouver Island, and so wasn't really exposed to a ton. And then moved to Montreal in my early 20s, and that was a real time of like, oh my god, everyone's gay. Like, it just helped me sort of like come to terms and accept who I was. It was just exposure, you know, like being in a big city that was really different from Nanaimo in Victoria. So I had worked through, you know, spent my teens feeling just in denial about it and very confused. And I moved to Vancouver when I was 25 and came out like a week before moving here. So I think that it's hard to know exactly what inspired it. There was a YouTube channel called I'm From Driftwood. Very, very impactful for me. I don't know if they're still doing stuff, but this was like 2009-ish, where it was a YouTube channel where a guy would go around small town America and interview people about their coming out stories.
Oh.
Yeah, and so all these videos, there were like 100 of them on this YouTube channel, and the videos would just be like 5 minutes long or something, or of these people getting interviewed talking about their stories. And I think that I was like, you know what, it's my turn for like telling my story, you know. I learned a lot from watching different people's stories, you know. It's just exposure, you know.
Yeah,
growing up at a time where it was like revolting and like a complete joke to be gay, I think that I just buried it really hard and like didn't want to revisit it. And then finally, after like a lot of exposure to it in my early 20s, I was like, okay, I think that I can like own who
I
am.
Really happy to hear that too.
Yeah.
But like, I think you make a good point. Like, so much of like the pop construction of like homosexuality or just queerness in general was either like you had the are they, are they not figures. Like, I'm a huge David Bowie fan, but does always puzzled me, like how he kind of how he claimed to be gay, then bisexual, then heterosexual, and he was like, I was trying to put on a performance in some way. And I don't know, it feels strange. Like, Neil Tennant was, I think, probably one of like the better examples, but he only came out in the 90s. And then I think like, the only real like reference point a lot of people had was Relax. Like, I just watched a YouTube video on like a history of that that music video too, and it was really interesting. Like, so
it's easy to become cynical, you know, like when it comes to the music industry, people, I mean, even Nicki Minaj 10 years ago was like, I'm bisexual. Maybe she is, who knows? I don't want to put like words into her mouth,
but I just know
for a fact that some people do it to broaden their audience. Right?
Yeah.
And that's like a sad fact. Over the last 30, 40 years, we've had people like Britney Spears and the completely straight people acting like they've just become like gay icons.
Right. Yeah, no, I was
whereas
thinking
in Vancouver,
Beyonce,
I'm like trying to play
example,
shows,
right?
Talking about my own struggles being gay, and the gay community just wants to like go listen to Britney Spears.
That's really
like they want to listen to actual gay stuff. Like they just want like pop escapism music and like fancy outfits.
Yeah, like put them onto some Coil, like I was saying.
I'm gonna check out Coil. That's the takeaway from this interview, William. I'm gonna check out Coil.
Awesome, yeah. I quite like them. A friend of mine absolutely adores them, like they're his biggest musical influence. And okay. So I might ask him too, because I'm trying to put them back on my listening radar too. Speaking of, like, anything you got on rotation a lot lately? Like,
yeah, there's an artist in the States named Amen Dunes, really interesting kind of experimental artist who's put out a number of albums who I really like. Trying to think, there are a number of others. Empress Of
is that name sounds familiar.
Sort of like American / Spanish, like some of her lyrics are in Spanish. Sort of electronic pop artist from LA who's really, really good. I don't know. Can you think of any like current ones? There's
like,
lots of good stuff out right now.
Current artists. I did check out La Lune's new EP, and I was really
impressed. Yeah,
really
La
impressed
great.
With it. I love a lot of shoegaze, especially like the classics. But a lot of the more modern stuff hasn't really been scratching the itch. Like it feels kind of like very meat and potatoes. But that one kind of felt like they weren't just like riding off coasting off the influences. And so I'm always a big fan of stuff that feels really outside the box. And I'm fine if like the influence is there. Like I really loved, the electronic musician, George Clanton.
Oh yeah. I really like George Clanton actually.
Yeah, Urapaya. I really love that one, but you can definitely tell like, he loves the Stone Roses. He loves Primal Scream, but it sounded fresh to me. Even though I'm familiar with both those artists,
I'm a really big fan actually of George Clanton. His name didn't come to mind when you asked me the question, but every so often I just sort of like go down the rabbit hole on YouTube and watch a bunch of his stuff. And I think that he's like a master of his craft.
He's really good at his '90s music video.
yeah. Like he knows what he's doing. He's a really good producer. But yeah, who else? There's a band in Vancouver right now called Smush, are like a brand new name. They're doing shoegaze and doing it really, really well. I think that they're like gonna blow up.
Yeah,
they're young. They're very good at what they're doing.
It's like with La Lune did. It kind of brought me back to when I listened to the first Paranul album. Have you heard of him?
Oh, I know that name. I don't know the music, but I've seen it on blogs and stuff.
Yeah, he's quite a big deal now. Korean sing, like one man band project, shoegaze and emo, I think. And yeah. Which speaking of, that's another thing. I think like punk and emo too is like one of like the best outlets I've seen for like queer musicians. I mean, queercore is a whole genre too. I still need to check out that one Hers Collective album. It looked really interesting.
Which ones are?
The Hers Collective. They're like an extreme punk. They get all these like bands. Like Soul Glow has been one of my favorite hardcore bands lately.
Yeah.
And they kind of like collab with us, especially a lot of queer artists too. And they have a compilation out, I think, now called We're Still Here. It was gaining a lot of traction lately. And because I've been getting into grindcore a lot too, Maya Chun is another one. Transgender grindcore artist, goes by the Cheeseburger Picnic as well, and some of the most like absolutely insane, like ear melting grind. It comes from a real place of like anger that doesn't feel forced, doesn't feel overproduced. Like that's
right on. Okay.
Yeah, no, just a lot of great artists too. Like I know I'm focusing a bit on like the queer section, but also just like in general that I could see people projecting onto if they've ever lived like felt like othered in some way. Like
absolutely, yeah. There's lots of really good stuff right now. I'm feeling optimistic about music and about like the new generation. I'm almost 40 now, so I need to like put a bit more effort into trying to keep up with what like people who are 21 are listening to. But there's lots of good stuff, there's lots of good local stuff, and it's nice to exist in a time right now where it like, how should I say this, like being queer feels like cool. I can't overstate how much it wasn't like that before, like for people when they were growing up in like my time, you know, like you can actually like for bands who put it in their bios, like we're a queer hip hop group or something like that. Like it makes
like Brockhampton,
it's like
maybe.
It's like cool cred. Whereas if for my era and where I grew up, like you would never think to do that. You would just be like a joke.
Yeah, no, like I've been.
So it's an amazing time in culture. didn't just see that there's like so much queer stuff and that like people are like supportive of that.
Yeah, like obviously I didn't have like firsthand. I would have been like what, negative 20 years old. But I've been binging through the Beastie Boys discography and absolutely loving it. But like the first album, their first album has some very suspect, like not on women and like lines on women and like queer people. And I did hear like they apologized very early about for like past mistreatment of women, of queer people at a time when that was still like commonplace in hip hop, which I mean, yeah, of course I totally respect it, but I do think like there's a disclaimer to be had. Like I don't know, like this is gonna sound, but I'm not like one who's easily like taken aback by like certain lyrics, but like that, like some of the lines on the first album were head scratching, and it's okay. Like, yeah,
was it Paul's Boutique or was it
Paul's
one?
Boutique? Where they cleaned themselves, they cleaned up like their image, I think, on that one a lot.
Okay,
but
yeah.
Like,
I've never listened to like early
Ill Communication. I mean, not Ill, License to Ill, like, and then Ill Communication.
Oh, yeah, I know the name. I don't remember that album very well.
Ill Communication, which is the one I've most recently listened to. Like that one is where they really started like adding a more conscious, progressive, like, approach to their music, like, in a way that wasn't preachy. I think that's one thing, like, I really love, is when an artist, like yourself, tackles, like, these heavy issues in a way that feels, like, authentic rather than, like, you're preaching to the choir. And,
thank you. So, I try my best with that stuff, so thank you for saying that.
Yeah, no, and so, any closing remarks?
You seem really passionate, and I love it.
Thank you.
This is awesome, yeah.
I'm going to check out the show running soon, yeah.
But yeah, I'm happy to be alive. I am happy to be a Vancouver musician.
Great stuff. And do we have any like upcoming projects we should know of?
I have a ton of shows coming up this summer.
Ooh.
So yeah,
I went to Westward and I caught your show. It was really nice.
Oh my god, I can't believe I got to play the Vogue.
It was so cool.
It was crazy, yeah. So yeah, I think that like there's been a bit of like an added sort of like a wave of interest since the Polaris thing. Have you heard of the Polaris Music Prize?
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
I was thinking getting it mixed up with Mercury, but yes, I've heard of Polaris.
It's Canada's version of the Mercury Award, yeah. But yeah, so that was kind of a crazy thing. I got nominated for it last month.
Congratulations!
Thank you, yeah. And so I've sensed that there's been like a newfound sort of like wave of interest, like some show offers this summer, so I feel like I'm sort of riding a wave of like excitement and interest right now. I just finished the next Devours album.
Ooh.
So I'll put that out next year. I still have to come up with like art direction and stuff like that, but musically it's done. And so yeah, the summer's gonna just be playing lots of shows and trying to fall in love. William, I'm searching for love right now.
Yeah, same here.
What?
here's open. I'm happy. I'm happy for you too.
Okay, yeah. Let's try to find love.
All right. This has been William Hofsink with
Devours.
Oh, and for CJSF, and thank you so much for your time.
Yeah.
William and Devours, Jeff, chatting at the Catalina Music Festival. Great interview. Thanks, Will. Thanks, Jeff. And this is Jeff's other project, The Golden Age of Wrestling, featuring future star Labradorite. Welcome back to Speak Up here on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. here in the second half of the show, and we're gonna end the Golden Age of Wrestling a little early just so that we can keep things moving and hear our next interview, which is also conducted by William at Catalano, featuring the musician Matthias Roden. So we're going to hear one of his tracks called Close Your Eyes, and then you'll hear William and Matthias's conversation.
Coming with you is CJSF, and today I am with
Matthias Roden.
Yes, Matthias Roden. Can you give us a little background for yourself?
Yeah, so the reason I'm being interviewed is because I performed first at the Vine Stage at Catalano today,
I'm a British Peruvian Canadian singer-songwriter. I released my first single last November through Light Organ Records, which is a local record label. And Catalano today is my first outdoor festival ever.
So oh, congratulations!
Very excited.
Yeah.
Big day.
Can I ask you, like, do you ever have, like, one of those, like, flashbulb memories of when, like, music kind of, like, became your life? Like, was it a specific album, or was it, like,
It was probably discovering Bruce Springsteen in high school.
Oh, nice.
I had a Bruce Springsteen obsession that my friends would make fun of me for, but it just made me look at music in a different way, like, more of a storytelling thing, almost like a spiritual thing, and it inspired me to start writing songs.
You know, I haven't listened to a lot of his stuff, but what I have heard, I've really liked, and I think one thing that really frustrates me about, like, kind of Bruce Springsteen fandom is a lot of people kind of see, like, the image of the boss, but not
right.
like the meaning behind his words. Like, there's so many like boomers who are like, oh my god, he represents the best of America, when he's really like kind of shining a light at like some of the worst parts.
Yeah,
but also kind of like the joy you can find in there. And I guess, is your music kind of like exploring similar ideas?
Yeah, or? Well, a lot of my music is, it's kind of, I call it retro pop. It's very like 80s synth pop inspired. So it's kind of like Dancing in the Dark Bruce Springsteen, but make that sound a whole album. And lyrically, I mean, I guess I can keep mentioning him because I am very inspired by him in the sense that a lot of his lyrics are about trying to get out of whatever situation you're in your life. And my lyrics are pretty similar. It's a very kind of dark topics, like depression, homelessness. If it's heartbreak, it's like heartbreak so bad you want to die. But I like the music to be bright and upbeat and up-tempo to contrast with that. So, to answer your initial question, it was more about...
No, go ahead.
I
keep
totally
going.
Lost track of initial
keep
question.
Going. I do the same thing.
it's music that I hope sort of people that are going through something difficult in their life could relate to or could get something from. But I don't want it to sound too depressing, if that makes sense. So,
do you think, like, I listen to a lot of like really sad music too. Like, I've been getting into the Red House Painters recently, and their music also sounds very like bleak and.
Yeah.
Do you think there's like a purpose to music that? Not only, like, because your music, again, you say there's a huge contrast between the bright sounds and the darker lyrics. Do you think that there's a purpose for both? Or, like, because I know some people are, like, they don't really see the point of listening to music that's too sad, but I personally think it can be kind of cathartic.
I absolutely agree. I think, at least myself, whenever I'm going through something really difficult, it's cheesy, but it makes you feel like you're not alone. It makes you feel like, usually songs like that have some kind of arc. There's some kind of resolution, even if it's just accepting whatever's happening. That's kind of what I try to do with my song. My first album, which is what I performed today, almost every song off of it, actually, 10 songs on the set list, is kind of, it's a journey sort of from the pits of hell into finding a bit more acceptance in your life.
It's really, what's it called?
The Verdict.
Verdict.
So, nobody knows that, so actually, I don't know if you can clear that.
Yeah, I can edit anything out, but...
Sure. It hasn't come out yet, but my idea for it was, I love the album The Downward Spiral by
Nine Inch Nails. I was just going to ask, like,
so mine is the opposite, because that one, he starts out kind
of
bad, and then he ends up dying at the end, essentially. Mine is kind of the opposite. Like, you start out wanting to die, you end up realizing that maybe life is worth living a little bit.
Kind of reminds me a bit of, have you ever heard the album Dogman Star by Suede?
I know Suede, but I don't know if I've heard that.
It's amazing, and it I don't think, like, it's kind of controversial as to whether or not it counts as a concept album.
Right.
But the title is supposed to be, like, the loose idea. It's, like, starting out, like, pretty much, like, debauched, homeless, trying to find a way to survive, and then eventually, like, climbing up the ranks. And there's, like, very loose lyrical themes in it, but... So it doesn't necessarily have to be concept, but that's kind of how I see it. Do you have, like, any other, like, albums that aren't really technically considered concept albums that you kind of, like, assign a concept to?
As in ones that I've made or the ones that I've inspired?
Oh, no, what you've heard, like...
Oh, that I've heard. Oh, gosh, I mean, sure. I'm really blanking here.
Or do you just have, like, other favorite, like, concept albums?
I mean, I love Smashing Pumpkins, Melancholy, and Infinite Sadness is supposed to be a concept album.
It is? I've listened to that one a lot, but I've never...
I think so. I think it's supposed to have some overarching narrative. My approach to my music right now, because I've been writing songs for so long, I've written songs for the last 10 years, but I used to write for other people and other artists in, like, the local, like, kind of indie pop scene.
Any names I should know? Because I'm trying to get more into local scene, too.
Reed Zachwell's, I wrote with a guy called Francis Batiste. I was actually playing today.
Sounds familiar, yeah.
and nothing like huge came out of it. Like, I, you know, I didn't get like a song on radio or anything like that. But it was kind of my into the local scene. And then I wrote the song for this album in the last like 2 to 3 years. But because I spent so long writing and I never actually released anything, the album to me kind of sounds like a greatest hits collection in the sense that it's very different. So there is that sort of narrative, lyrical thread towards it, kind of like the albums you were talking about.
Yeah. Jane Doe by Converge is another one I've been really like... Have you heard of it? Like,
no, I have not.
It's pretty inaccessible because it's like mathcore. It's very like, I call it psychosis put to like, pure psychosis.
I mean, I love
put
that
to
concept,
like,
yeah.
It's supposed to be like about a breakup and just the devastating aftermath, but it's like one of the most creative like breakup albums I've ever heard. And
yeah,
again, like it's
that.
Very,
yeah.
It's very intense. Like there's just like, but it's also to me, it's kind of like a testament as to why, what people like, draws people to, like extreme music or like very like emotionally potent music. Like,
yeah.
Again, like when I listened to the Downward Spiral in grade 10 English class, I remember exactly where I was. And that like warped my music taste like forever.
It's
kind of like that moment too, but it's like, it's got like very aggressive, intense, hardcore tracks. It's got like sludgy, atmospheric passages. It's like, again, I just love it when albums like they got a variety on display. Like it doesn't get one note. And I feel like when I'm talking to you, like that's kind of something that you that you're striving for.
Oh,
right?
Totally. Yeah, I think I'm just, it's my ADHD. My officially undiagnosed ADHD. That
same.
Makes me that way. I get bored of sounds really quickly. So, like today, the first song I played is this kind of very almost psychedelic, like trip hop, electronica, very dreamy. And the next song is like straight up 80s synth pop, and I could see the crowd being like, "Oh, I didn't expect that," but
yeah.
I like that.
I'm so sorry I missed that. It sounds really cool.
I do like a variety of stuff, so I try to make my music have the same, just a bunch of ideas thrown together.
Yeah, and do you think like, because I'm speak with more neurodiverse people.
It's officially undiagnosed.
Well,
at least suspected.
I mean,
every online test is given to me.
Not
it's absolutely impossible to get diagnosed here.
Yeah, I mean,
so,
it took me long too.
Yeah.
But what I was gonna say, like, what was it? Do you think like the ADHD has kind of like impacted your music in like other ways too, or?
Yes, because I obsess about tiny details. I don't know if that's actually ADHD.
I think it is. The hyperfixation.
Exactly.
Hyperfocus.
So, it's kind of forced me to deconstruct a lot of songs and figure out why I like them and what makes them catchy. And I kind of apply the same to my music. I typically write my entire songs in my head before I even play a note on the piano. I don't know if that has anything to do with ADHD, but...
I mean, I have a bad habit of, like, coming up with things in my head and being like, okay, I have this very vivid picture, but it's so hard to get it perfect on the page.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it makes me probably less productive than I want to be. But yeah, no, I haven't thought too much about how it's impacted my music.
Again, it's a strange question, but...
Maybe my music tastes, because I get bored of things so quickly that I listen to everything. Like, I listen to... Nine Inch Nails. I'll listen to like the girliest pop music.
I love Charlie.
I love Charlie Sands' latest album. Amazing. I listen to music in Spanish and French and German and English. Like,
No, that's great. Maybe for like a couple more questions.
Do
you have like a favorite? So I'm thinking obviously Bruce is your like favorite artist, right?
Probably, yeah.
Do you have like a favorite album of his or favorite song of his that you would like recommend?
Favorite album is one called Tunnel of Love, which not as many people are familiar with.
It's very sophisticated pop, right?
Yeah, it's sophisticated pop, kind of almost like 80s adult contemporary, but lyrically it's just absolutely brutal. And I love that. I love that the music sounds like a sort of romantic evening, but the lyrics are the most sort of incisive, depressing take on losing love, basically, and finding yourself an adult, sort of having wasted a part of your life and not really knowing where you want to go. Through the lens of a failing marriage, that's kind of the divorce album, as the fans call it.
Oh, I see. Have you heard the song No Children by the Mountain Goats?
No.
It's... probably one of the most like heartbreaking, like deteriorating marriage songs I've ever heard, and again, for a lot of people have heard it from the show Moral Oral, which itself is very dark, like adult comedy. But that is like whenever I think like the marriage is ruined, that's the song that pops in my head. I definitely recommend it. I haven't listened to a full album.
There's
but
like,
but favorite Bruce song then.
Oh god, that's really hard. think. You know, there's one called Spirit in the Night, the very first album in 1973. It's about a group of friends going to a lake, and depending on how you interpret the lyrics, either they get really drunk and then have a great time, or they drown and die. But it's this kind of jazzy, like, strange little song, and there's just something so beautiful and haunting about it. But it's also just something you can kind of groove to, I guess.
Gotta check that out, then.
And yeah, I think that might be my favorite. And you played it live the one time I saw him.
I'm hoping to take both my parents, this like one of the few artists they agree on that they love is Bruce Springsteen.
Right.
I'm hoping maybe to take them like in the fall because I think he's coming by.
Yes, right? He is. Yeah, I saw him 12 years ago, God. And I was right there and I like touched his leg when I reached out. So yeah, I hope I can go again this year.
For Boston,
it's more expensive this time.
Yeah. All right, so. Okay. Anything else you'd like to say, like plug your socials? Or?
Yeah, well, you can find me on Instagram and Spotify. My name is Matias Roden, MATIASRODEN. Check out the Castellano page. You can also find my link there and somewhere, I'm sure. I've got three songs out right now, and they're all from my upcoming EP, which comes out at the end of July. It's kind of alternative synth-pop, retro-pop is what I would call it, with really depressing lyrics. So if you're into that, then go check that out.
All right, thank you. This has been William Hofsink with CJSF and Matias Roden. Goodbye for now.
Thanks to William and Matias for that interview. Turns out we're not going to have time for Connor's interview with the Pipe Band. So you can look forward to that on a future episode of Speak Up, perhaps next Monday or Tuesday or next Thursday. You'll have to tune in and find out for yourself. We are going to then end the show with a little bit of music. This inspired by the first interview that William did with Jeff from Devours. We're going to hear some of the band Smush that Jeff shouted out and predicted would blow up. And I agree with Jeff. This band is really great. They just put out their record, If You Were Here, I'd Be Home Now. It's really good and full of all sorts of cool ideas and different sounds, all sort of rooted in that cool shoegazy stuff. So this is the opening track from the record, If You Were Here, I'd Be Home Now, called If We Didn't Cry. And might be time for more after, but that's probably it. So take care of yourself, and Democracy Now! Will be next. You see, you have to set it up so that it plays. Okay, we'll do that, and here we go. Smush, If We Didn't Cry, on Speak Up.